Next is presentation from Energy System Solutions Company. First, I'd like to introduce representatives from the company, the President, Energy System Solutions Company, and the Chairman of Westinghouse, Danny Rutledge. Also, with Energy System Solutions Company, Company Executive Vice President Abratani. Also, from the company, Leader of Transmission Distribution Systems Division, Harazono. I'd like to ask Danny to give you a presentation. Channel 1 is the channel for the receiver, for the translation.
To be with you today, and I will assure you that over my time in this position, I will continue to work on my Japanese so that maybe you won't always have to have an earpiece like I have to do now. So we will work on that together. It's a very exciting time for us at the ESS business, and I'm proud to be here with two of our leaders in that business. We are in the middle of a significant reinvention of our corporation and how we view the energy business, and how we're going to go forward. And I want to share that with you so that you have the insights that we're looking at and the decisions that we're in the middle of right now. We have built that strategy off of all the fundamental business principles of the Toshiba Recovery Initiative. We are a company that will be proud of its business ethics. We are a company that will be proud of its accounting standards, and a company that never loses sight of what we've learned in the last several years. So with that foundation very solidly under us and management commitment that we will never go back into a situation like that, then we're able to build off of that platform, off of that foundation, a strategy where we can return back to greatness in our shareholder value from an energy perspective, and we can expand our businesses globally. So this is the theme that I will be talking about today, is the progress that we're making in that journey. And I will go through these slides as we can. The first thing that I would like to talk about is the fact that ESS is a much more integrated company than what most companies have. We have the ability from start through all the way through each of our customers, be them consumers or businesses, governments, whatever the case may be, to be able to deliver from energy generation. We were able to transmit and provide great new storage opportunities for businesses, as well as to optimize the very use of that energy. And in a world where we are constantly energy constrained, or we are threatened by our environmental conditions of the energy that we create, having that entire portfolio now in the ESS business is something that will show you where that growth strategy will tie in that results back to shareholder value. I think that the word, I use the word global as far as a company, because I think this is a very important part of our strategy. That for years, we have been a Japanese-based company who exports globally. And we are changing that entire philosophy in ESS. We are actually a global company who has a very proud history and our headquarters here in Japan. Because those headquarters are here, this is where I live. But my company is a global company. And so we will be making a transformation from being a Japanese company who happens to export to being a global company who is attacking the global markets and is proud of its heritage here in Japan and will continue our support of the domestic marketplace and bring not only products from the world to Japan with the greatest innovations, but deliver our innovations from Japan to the world in a more streamlined marketplace. I think that this, looking forward, is one of the things that you'll see that we are changing in ESS, and I truly believe that being that global company is in our future and is necessary for the growth that I believe we're capable of achieving. To understand that strategy, I think it's important to understand the makeup of ESS. It's important to realize that 67% of our revenue comes from outside of our domestic markets here in Japan. It is important to recognize that we are split about half nuclear and half from non-nuclear revenues. It's also important to recognize that 70% of our employees are outside of Japan. Yet we have a great business here in Japan, and we will never lose sight of that. But it creates a great opportunity and footprint in a global marketplace for us to be able to leverage those global footprints to export from the factories that we have in Japan. I will place our factories in Japan against any manufacturing of any country in the world for our low cost of poor quality, for our high execution standards, and our ability to deliver. We now have to find a way, though, to take those factories' outputs and put them into the marketplace in a more concise manner and in a way that allows us to grow profitably. If you look at where we operate right now in over 42 countries, this really creates the opportunity for us to have a much more global voice. It gives us the ability to penetrate those markets because we have footprints in those markets. And this ability to lever those footprints allows us to have the voice to the leaders that helps us establish policies that will allow us to enter those markets and bring our products from the domestic markets of Japan into the global marketplace and be able to service the customers here in Japan more effectively with products that we can find and bring into this market and help the customers and utilities in this country reduce its cost of electricity. When we think about this and the new technologies, having this global voice is very critical for a company like ours that has such a diverse portfolio and has the ability to work worldwide with that voice. ESS has provided challenging but realistic expectations that we hope will build and rebuild the trust and predictability that we can deliver. So when we show numbers like this, I always try to keep in mind the fact that we have learned a lot about our financial projections in the last several years. And we've taken that to heart with the numbers that we share and tried to keep them challenging to our employees to achieve, but realistic in so that we can regain your trust and our shareholders' trust that we can predictably produce profits, revenue, and growth. If we look over the next 3 years, it is important to note that these changes, and some of the biggest ones that I would share with you, is the ability for us to have a positive free cash flow. This has been something the company has worked on significantly, and we continue to work on to work the cash so that we can avoid having to have additional borrowings that we might not be able to get or would cost us significant amounts of extra money to get. And so that key free cash flow position, we now have a very solid plan of having positive free cash flow each of the next 3 years in our plan. And as we build on that success, we'll have the ability to continue the ability for generating free cash flow into years in the future. This comes from really doing several things. One of the biggest one is we're going to be improving our commercial prowess. This means that we have to be a little more careful about what contracts we take, be more aggressive in the markets we go into about our ability to bring greatest technology, even if it's not the lowest price. Because some others may have the ability to produce their products at a lower cost, but I still challenge that the greatest value lies in the Toshiba products that we have with our quality. I also would draw your attention to the top line growth. Again, these are challenging but realistic objectives, and you can see the growth rates that we see going out over the next 3 years. These are put together based on taking what the available market is, reducing that down to what our market share may be, and then taking a conservative element even on top of that. Again, because we need to rebuild that trust that what we put out is what we're going to be able to deliver on. These have been very challenging times for the employees of Toshiba, as well as the leadership and as well as shareholders. We've addressed several one-time issues in our financial past to try to clean up everything that we needed to clean up so that we could put a clean slate going forward. This is essential for our ability to grow, is that we start out with a solid financial basis. We create our own cash. We go into the markets and build our top line and deliver on bottom line operating profit through execution. As we think about the shareholders' value that we will be creating, this year we will come to focus on things like our overhead costs to keep us competitive in foreign markets, as many of them are extremely competitive right now. We will work on our commercial prowess, as I mentioned, and contract structures, and being able to utilize the premium that we will be able to get with our technology. And this has been something that we've been able to be very successful in our nuclear business with, and we'll continue to expand that over all of ESS to get price because of our technology instead of price because we're cutting it or we get a job just because we reduce the price down to where we could win. It's more important to have a profitable contract than just a contract. And so this is a focus on commercial prowess that we'll be working on. So I want to talk a little bit more now in detail about our business units. I think I've painted the economic picture that we expect our revenues to grow. We have a clear picture on how to do that. We expect our operating profit to be solid, and that we expect our cash flow to be in a positive manner year over year. We have many different kinds of businesses that we're in. We'll kind of give you a walk through those businesses. And some of the businesses have other challenges than others do, but the nice part about having that total integrated portfolio is our ability to balance the highs and lows to create that predictable earnings that we talked about. First, I'll talk about our nuclear business. I think it's very important to recognize that the world needs energy, and I think that's something everyone will agree with when we look at our populations who don't have energy today. But it's also equally important that that energy come from secure sources that can be trusted. It comes from secure sources that aren't at market dynamics based on perturbations that may happen in the world, such as we often see with gas or with coal sometimes. It's also important that the nuclear market be recognized for what it is. It is a hedge against price volatility. It is a hedge against energy security risks. It also has to be something that could be economically installed. So we're going to talk about those elements today and how that is playing out in the markets. I think the most interesting thing that I have found in this market segment is the growing need not for environmental use of nuclear power just because of regulation or special interest groups, but truly in many of the countries that are having rapid growth rates, it's truly a challenge now for having clean air. And clean air is the one thing that will cause any society unrest if we don't have clean air, because that's what our children breathe, and we're all here to protect our children in the long run. So when I look at those market priorities and the ability to grow, I think it's well documented that that there is going to be that kind of generation needed around the world because of our population. And for us to be able to provide the world with running water, sanitation, refrigeration, even things that, even though I saw a recent survey when people listed water, sanitation, and refrigeration and their cell phone, which would you prioritize as the most necessary? Most people prioritize their cell phone as the most required. But I think in reality, people lose sight of the fact that cell phones don't work without electricity. And civilization cannot have the life expectancy it has if we do not have clean water and sewer for the world. So with that in mind, we think about the new build and our current plans. It is one thing that we'll look at here. I think the year FY 2015 has been an interesting one. The nuclear industry has went through its recoveries, I think, from post-Fukushima. It's incorporated its lessons learned. Westinghouse posted a record profit for the entire business unit last year. And when we look at being able to generate that profit, it really came in spite of the new units, not because of the new units. And I think this is an important point to recognize about how we changed our focus in the nuclear business. The focus before was we wanted the growth out of the new units. When the new units started to slow down, we changed our market focus and went after more aggressively the services and fuels business. We were extremely successful in implementing that strategy and went into markets, especially in Eastern Europe, where we are now creating fuel for the Russian reactors, which prior to that had a monopoly on those fuel markets. We've aggressively went against our other competitors, and I'm very happy to say that I believe we have emerged the successful winner of a very aggressive set of the last 2 years of competition. And you can look at that from a lot of different things. Just read about some of our key competitors and what they're going through right now at a time when Westinghouse posted its highest record profit ever. So when we think about that, we're going to talk about this more later, about what do you do when your primary strategy, you hope for growth, didn't happen? How do you fill in those gaps as markets have ebbs and flows of timing? As I mentioned, we've made significant growth in the maintenance, service, and fuel business, but we also recognize our social responsibility that after nuclear power plants have provided clean and carbon-free generation to the people that it serves for a number of years, that we also have a responsibility to take those plants back to the state that the owner committed for them to be in after they've finished their life. And so we are growing right now a significant decommissioning business to take care of that market. So it is a global market. As plants are reaching their 50th or 60th year of operation and having provided millions of people electricity, that they are ready to be closed. Some are being closed for political reasons. Some are being closed for economic reasons. Some are just being closed because they're just old. And so we have created a cross-function with our ESS business, this is in a global network, that allows us to go into this decommissioning market, which we see as a very large market, not only for the commercial nuclear power industry, but also many governments around the world have facilities that need to be decommissioned. And this is really where we're able to gain a great footprint. We just completed decommissioning a former big fuel facility in the United States. We just took the last buildings off of that this last week. And so we also are working across Europe with decommissioning some of those plants. We're working in Spain. We're working here in Japan. We're working really around the world. And so having that footprint and that global footprint is very critical for us to continue to grow that business. It is also very important to recognize that we actually have a significant market share of the total nuclear business right now above our competitors, and that's something we have to work very hard to protect. And as some of our competitors come out of restructuring and out of reformation of their companies and buyouts, they're going to be very aggressive. And so we have positioned ourselves right now to recognize that our technology will have to move faster than what our competitors are going to come out of the market at us with. We have a great company that is known for its innovation. And we feed the best technology in Japan to the world as we develop technology at our great engineering centers here in Japan. That technology is being used around the world. As we also then deploy around the world and get feedback and find other technologies, we're bringing that back to help the utilities here in Japan to be able to improve safety and reduce their cost, which is a very important function that we have as a company, is to help the Japanese utilities and provide everything we can to them from a global perspective. I'm also very excited about some of our new technology. and the heavy ion cancer treatment equipment. This, again, is another product that we are in market with right now, and the results have been phenomenal in the ability to eliminate where cancer has been found in people. And now we're going to take those results and we're going to start marketing that around the world from Japan. And I see this as a very big business opportunity because of the high success rates that we've had to be able to help people live after they've received a deadly cancer. And so this is one of the things in our nuclear business that we're going to be pushing very hard globally and be able to move forward with that. I'd also like to talk a little bit about the new builds. That seems to always be the questions we get a lot about. The new build projects are all progressing well. After the commercial resolution of the issues that we had in the projects in the U.S. with the acquisition that we made of Chicago Bridge and Iron, Stone and Webster Division, we've been able to move those projects forward rapidly. And we've also are very proud to announce that the newest Westinghouse plant in the fleet just came online a few weeks ago at Watts Bar in Tennessee. I know a lot of people don't realize, but new units are coming online as we speak. And so we only hear many times about a new plant or an old plant is being closed, but unfortunately we're not getting as much media about the fact that new plants are coming online. And so that is the newest addition to the Westinghouse fleet is the Watts Bar Unit 2 plant. Also, Sanmin is now in functional testing, which is the final thing you do before we load fuel into the reactor for operation. And our Haiyang facility just completed its cold hydro test, and so now it's moving into hot functional testing. And we should have fuel in Sanmin before the end of this year. And just to kind of take it from a concept into reality, I want to show you just a short video about how these projects are put together, how we've used the modular insights from our companies here in Japan to work with Westinghouse and our other nuclear companies to learn about modularization, how we were able to use that in spite of the stoppages on this project that we had to look at our lessons from Fukushima, and despite of some licensing changes that happened at the last minute, we still now have a power plant that's going to serve millions of people with clean air that they don't have in China right now. So please take a look at this video, and you can see it from 2009. I'd also ask you to draw your attention to the unit behind the first unit, because one of the things that has been most impressive is that after we got past the first-of-a-kind issues on the first unit, that the second units are nearly caught up. And so we've seen a reduction of about 35% on what it takes to get the second units up. And now we're seeing the same advantages as we're moving on into the other new units. So having the first-of-a-kind issue resolved is a key element for us and being able to commercially deploy the AP1000 in the future. New build projects underway. We have several of them that are very much in the queue. A few weeks ago, President Obama in the United States met with Prime Minister Modi and announced that while they may have changed the site, that they are progressing with the six AP1000s. We also believe there's opportunities for another six at another site in India. And so those agreements have been made between the governments. We're finalizing our contracts as we speak. We have our early works agreement that we'll get first before we go into the full EPC agreement next year. We also have the projects at NuGen that many of you are aware of. We are finalizing the remaining licensing issues. We had a long set of discussions with the regulator in the UK to finalize what it is we needed to do to get the final license. And then that asset will be ready as we go in to look at the final issues in the UK to get to an initial investment decision after we have the license. Obviously, there's a lot of activity in the UK right now. And so we will take pause and make sure that we understand exactly what all that means to us as we continue to move forward. But the project is very promising. It's still very competitive in the UK market. In fact, I think it may be even more important to the UK government now, as they might not have as much free ability to bring electricity under the channel as what they do now. And so they may become more energy independent, which for them means more nuclear power. Otherwise, they'll be importing what they need to create their energy. So we're going to continue to watch that for the NuGen project. We do have negotiations in Turkey underway for a third site there that are going very well, and we're going to continue to watch that. Many U.S. utilities are continuing their license, and we'll continue to see which ones are going to be the next set of first movers. I think many of them would like to see Sanmen come online because that de-risks the design completely. When the first unit comes into operation, then you effectively have eliminated another section of risk. I'd also tell you that China has continued to move forward with its projects, and we are starting to get the long lead time equipment orders in from China for the next wave. And so we have, at Toshiba level, have stayed consistently with the 45 units that we believe that will come over the next several years, between now and 2030. Westinghouse has a more aggressive plan than that, but that's okay. We'll be happy for Westinghouse if they can make 50 or 60 units, but our plan right now only has 45 in it. Switching gear now, I want to talk about another very important business segment of ESS, which is our thermal power systems and services business. And what I would just tell you on that is that the markets that we have are evolving and changing a little bit from where we were. The markets are currently more in line where we're seeing emerging areas, and we're going to be re-looking at many political positions about the thermal business are changing. I would draw your attention in the United States, which is a really big market for us for our turbine supply. There is a debate between the Democrats and the Republican. They have a completely opposite position on coal and on thermal generation. And so based on how the elections go, we may see a political change about the ability to expand coal back in the United States. And so we want to be able to provide the most efficient products that we can and try to look at our new technologies to help reduce the emissions of coal going forward. It's clearly a polarized issue in the United States, so we don't know where that's going to go. But in the near term, we can see growth in some of the smaller, mid-sized countries as well as some of the other emerging countries. And so we need to capitalize on those markets, and we have a strategy that we have to do that. That strategy we'll call our regional strategy, which is really that we're going to focus on very specific areas where either the market is underserved or we have a technology advantage that we can serve that market better than anyone else. And so, again, I mentioned some of our factories that we have. I would stand up against any factory in the world about its ability to produce efficiently and in high quality. And so we're going to push that globally to be able to ensure that as we continue to look at that footprint, that we'll be the supplier of choice in those countries. We have a little briefing there on each of the market sectors. I'm not going to go through those individually, but the second part of the strategy besides new build is a little bit like we talked about with nuclear power. We need to be able to capitalize on that service business. And so by regionalizing in the service business, you can see on the slide 20 there, that by regionalizing into that and working to aggressively go after the service business with our technology and delivery systems, we can set up different partnerships with localize our own service positions in these countries. And that's going to allow us, again, to take advantage of some of the underserved markets as well as be much more positioned to be highly more competitive against some of our competitors. Next, I'd like to talk about some of the new technologies in the thermal business. You know, our challenge in the long term in the thermal business is to continue to reduce emissions generated from this product line and continue to increase the efficiency. And we're very excited about some of the new technologies that are being created, such as our coal gasification CO2 cycle plants, where it's a very unique technology that we were able to develop and are developing over the next 10 years that will put us in a very competitive advantage, we think, compared to existing technologies of today, and yet keep the abundant supplies of coal that are available and abundant supplies of gas utilized to their optimum amount. We also are targeting new technologies in the innovations that we have by going through and looking at the thermal efficiency cycle. We've developed some great technology that will put us at a 46% or higher efficiency rate, which is significantly improved from where we are today. And when you think about a power plant, every 1% of power literally means hundreds of thousands of families can get their power for no incremental increase in emissions or fuel use if we can deliver that from the machine design instead of from the fuel source. Next, I'm going to move into the transmission distribution systems. The T&D business has certainly went through some challenges over the last year. You're aware of that. But also during that period of time, they have went through a significant change and have really produced, I think, a good plan for us to get into and to be able to change our strategies of what we're doing and be able to go back to being a very profitable business for us. If you look at where we're at in the solutions right now, one of the big things that we have is we need to have a differentiation between our transmission distribution equipment and others. And with the combination and collaboration of the other ESS company, which is Landis and Gear, what we're able to do is to provide a more holistic solution instead of just selling piece parts for a transmission distribution system. That holistic solution really takes advantage of some of the things that we have. Going forward, I'm going to talk about those next. But I think it is important to recognize on this slide that one of the biggest markets is going to be, if you look at that pie chart in the top right, 28% of the transformers and equipment that we would sell are 50 years or more, and 48% are 30 years or more. And when you think about what we have with that, that is significant market share that's going to happen as these equipment start failing. Unfortunately, with this kind of equipment, when it decides to quit working, it tends to be catastrophic. And so then when the catastrophic starts happening, people start ordering lots of equipment because they need spares. So if you can imagine a transformer fails, there could be a significant amount of people without power. You need the spares as you hit what's called the other side of the technology bathtub curve. And in this kind of equipment, you have failures when equipment is first installed, and then it runs many, many years, and then you'll have failures on the back end as it gets old because the equipment is only designed for a certain amount of life. And so this is where we believe we've got a good opportunity to, as these failures start occurring from the age of these units, that we're going to be able to get regional strategies together to focus on being ready for those failure mechanisms, but be able to replace these transformers with technology that no one else has, again, as I mentioned, with our combination with Landis and Gear. I think it's also important to note in the T&D business that not all markets are served equally by competitors. So we're focusing right now on those underserved markets. You see that we have focused in the Middle East. Our domestic market here in Japan is still a very good market for us. North America, with having that new technology I mentioned, is going to be very critical, which right now it's in a commodity market. But with our new technology, we believe we'll change that from a commodity market into a premium market because of what we can do to provide the efficiencies in that market. A key element for us in our strategy, though, is what we're going to be doing with not only with India, which is a key element for us with our service center on the previous slide, but we also are looking for addition of new models that we're testing today and are going to be rolling into the marketplace, that we'll be going directly in with that technology advantage. And we'll also be leveraging a significant other advantage we have within Toshiba, which is our battery capabilities are really emerging stronger. And anytime you talk about distribution, transmission systems, and you talk about having renewables, batteries have to be part of that equation. So the two things that actually help make renewables continue to be viable in the marketplace are going to come from batteries and are going to come from the management of that power and how we can optimize the use of renewables because of the fact that they're either on or off today. And the battery capacities that we're starting to get now are going to take us to a point that lets the power be more evenly distributed throughout the day. And I think this is going to give us a technology advantage in the T&D world as we go through that. It's very important to look at that storage battery market projection. If you look out in 2016 through 2019 on the bottom chart, you're seeing a significant business volume. And, of course, our objective is we want to try to get as much market share of that as we can. And we are very well poised to do that, again, because we'll have the Landis and Gear tie-in with this, which others won't have anything like that. We have and will maintain a strong domestic business here in Japan, and we're going to focus on the retrofits and new systems that we have. It is an important part for us to be able to take the approach that we've, for example, used in the UAE and the Middle East. We have now grown to about 39% of the business in the UAE, and we want to take that model and move that into other Middle Eastern countries. And these are the two things that I want to draw specific attention to, because even though we'll be moving back into some new technologies, into some of the more developed countries as they have aging, we want to be very aggressive into continuing our service to the Japanese market. We have installed significant state-of-the-art systems here, and we'll continue to do that. And so we're very excited about the domestic market. We also want to get in more into the Middle East. We still think this is going to be a place where we can take advantage of that unserved market. Landis and Gear have the largest share of their market with 35% in the world. This is about 19 million meters installed. And our global footprint, again, from Toshiba allows us to go through and take advantage of that. Our technology is widely recognized as a leader. But we do have a lot of competition. And so we have to continue to improve our meters and continue to improve our ability to collect the data. And so we constantly look for adjacencies that we can use our technology for. And we want to consider all ways that we can take advantage of the systems that we have and provide, again, those services to adjacency businesses. I hate to call the rest of my businesses as other when there's some really interesting things that we're doing in that. But so it seems like a weak title for the rest of these businesses, but because they're really some interesting technology. In hydro and geothermal, we are very fortunate that we are the number one supplier of the world. We have the largest market share of both of those technologies. We really value the fact that for countries or businesses that are looking for alternatives, that we have the ability to provide significant amounts of coverage to them from a geothermal or a hydro perspective. I think the other thing that we want to continue to do is to help promote policies that encourage the investment into these kinds of projects, because they are truly renewable from a different standpoint, is most of them work 24 hours a day, whereas with wind and solar, we're limited to whatever the wind and solar cycle is. With the geothermal and with the hydro to a large degree, we're able to run those 24 hours a day and provide carbon-free generation from those. And so we'll continue in those businesses. The PV market has been one that was a challenge last year, even though in Japan we still have the number one position. When the feed-in tariffs changed in Japan last year, it certainly had an impact on our PV marketplace. So we need to go back and redo our strategy and see what we needed to do to make the PV technology more usable and more affordable. And so we have went over and looked at the entire IoT process from batteries and how it ties into the PV system, again, tying into the management and service with the batteries to be able to take new packages back out to our customers. And we think that's going to be an advantage for us, again, by being able to tie the Toshiba batteries into this. And as we look at that marketplace going forward, I think that our PV business will make a big turnaround this year and be able, with its new products that it's going to roll out over the next 18 months, be able to be, again, a real positive business for us going forward. The next thing we'll talk a little bit about is our Freeport tolling agreement. One of the things in my 35 years in the energy business, from being in utilities to being in suppliers and companies, that has always proven true is that none of us know what the price of any commodity fuel is going to be more than just probably a few months. And I was yesterday shocked when I saw natural gas in the United States change price 15% in one day. And so what we are faced with here is we have a great opportunity with this project that we are able to hedge what is becoming increasingly concerning after events like what happened in the Ukraine, where the Russian government decided to shut off gas to the Ukraine. That caused a tremendous concern to that country. We have the ability to be able to assure a supply through our LNG systems. We have the ability to provide energy security to places that does not have it today. And so we're trying to find the best way of how we will approach selling the remaining offtake that we have. We've had good success so far. We have a lot more to do. But it is truly a good hedge for us based on what may happen with gas prices around the world to be able to have this capacity. And so as we sell that capacity, we will keep you posted on that. But again, I was thinking about the best example of this is I remember in 1976 in the United States when gas was 25 cents a gallon, and just a few years later it was over a dollar. And I was thinking about, as a society, what would have happened if we would have built our whole society around gasoline instead of around coal and nuclear and the other energy forms. And so what I'm really proud about our business at ESS is we have the ability and are hedged against any one of these big swings that's out in the marketplace. This hedge with natural gas, with having the ability to liquefy and transport it anywhere in the world, is capacity that you can't generate overnight. You either have it or you don't at a time when the markets need it. And so we're going to have it. And so by having it, now we have the ability to sell it and the ability to look at that in an integrated sale with what else we may be able to sell with it. So at this point right now, we are being and continuing that. We are finishing the units that are there. And again, I think over time that you'll look at this and see that its ability to provide that energy hedge may be its greatest single value versus just looking at what its price is today. And it wasn't but 10 years ago that natural gas was selling for 6 times higher than it is today. Oil was selling for 2 times as much. So we don't really know where energy is going to be in the next 10 years. So it's better to have a hedge and a balance in that portfolio, which is what I think we bring to the investors. Next, I'll talk about hydrogen. This has really been something interesting as I have really gotten into it. We actually have now built the first standalone hydrogen energy supply system. It's called our H2-1. It is really, again, a hedge against what the future energy needs might look like around the world. Its technology is part of our long-term energy strategy that as the fossil fuels or other fuel sources become scarce, that we have ways in which we can still generate electricity. So we have to take these products and scale them to even more and more so that we can protect the planet and as much as we can in reducing the CO2 emissions as low as possible. So in closing, I'd like to say that we've made great progress in the last year. I think we've done a lot to restructure the company. We have a lot more that we're going to do as far as our marketing and what we're going to be doing to help in our cost structure. We also want to make sure that we recognize the fact that we're going to be more of a global company and that we want to enhance shareholder value with all these decisions, and that's our paramount importance as well as the safety of the products of our people and our customers. So with that, thank you very much.
That was it. That's the end of the presentation from ESS Company. Next is a Q&A, and Danny Rutledge is going to deliver answers to you in English, but questions can be asked in either language. Please raise your hand, and please tell us who you are and where you come from. The other thing is I'd like to invite as many people as possible to ask questions. So one individual asking one question. I'd like to ask your cooperation. Anyone having a question? Thank you very much for your presentation. Mitsubishi UFJ Morgan Stanley. My name is Miyamoto. Yes, I have to restrict my question to one. So let me ask you one question. Slide 16. I want you to go back to slide 16 and answering my question. This is about new build. Six units plus six. So in total, that's 12 in India and three in the UK. That's total 15. And the remainder is 22. So where, which market do you expect to be able to win those new build opportunities?
Well, we have a whole series of orders in China that are coming in. We believe that China will still be one of the largest markets for the AP1000. And right now, there's the early works have already been authorized for another set of eight units. And so right behind those will be another set of eight right behind them within the next 2 to 3 years. And so those are very near-term opportunities in China. Now, our scopes change, but Westinghouse always has a certain scope in each one of these projects. And so you have three units there in Turkey. And so, you know, getting to the 45 is really driven off of the ones you've listed, that I've listed here, as well as the ones in China. And we've got a few other opportunities that are coming up that we'll be talking about over the next year.
Any other question?
So the person towards the front, please. My name is Shimada from Nikko Securities. I have two questions, but I've been asked to ask only one, so just one question. So this might be not your specialty, but this relates to thermal. So just to check on the technology, slide 21. So 46% is under the efficiency, but I've been super critical. So I think the demonstration and exam will be over in 2016. So according to this chart, in 2018, you can commercialize this technology. So AUSC, this is AUSC. So in terms of the schedule for commercialization, so if you have any schedule in mind, if you have any plan for this, please let us know. So in terms of AUSC, this is a question related to AUSC and page 21. So according to this timeline, 2018 is the timing we are looking at. And as of this moment in Kyushu, we have the thermal power plant, small-scale one, in Toshiba, located in Kyushu. So within that, we have been conducting demonstration tests, as you have mentioned. And once that is completed, all the technological barrier is cleared. That is how we see it. So all the rest is up to the customer. So the hurdle is definitely the cost issue. So whether it is going to be 2018 or 2019, we're not quite sure about the schedule, given the response from the customer. So unfortunately, we cannot give you more detail than that. So for 600,000 kilo is the target in terms of power. So in comparison to USC, how much of a cost advantage do you have? And also, if you have a target as to cost reduction, please let us know in terms of AUSC. Unfortunately, we cannot give you details really related to cost, but basically 600,000, that could be a one step. That is really up to the plant. But in terms of scale merit, and obviously we need to have more than 600,000 in terms of capacity. Also, we need to make sure that it actually pays as a business. So, of course, that depends. That would decide on the CapEx, capital expenditure. So, so whether 42 would go up to 46% in terms of efficiency, we have to make sure that our cost and our investment is valid vis-a-vis the enhancement of the efficiency. So, well, perhaps the CO2 emission would be reduced in comparison to coal-fired thermal plant. But what about the Ministry of Environment? Would they actually approve of this, given the reduction in CO2? So are you talking about the 46% efficiency, or are you going to enhance that even further? We haven't had any specific instruction for the Ministry of Environment. Thank you.
Wakabayashi,
Circle Crossed. You mentioned that more emerging markets and the discount rate from 11 to up what? And the risk retail rate is going to go up. Therefore, I believe that the discount rate is going to go up. The cost overrun coming down, that's something I'd like to ask, particularly 2018, the balance sheet. When it comes to nuclear business, with that discount rate, what is going to be the anticipated balance sheet of nuclear business? That's my question.
Well, the nuclear business is going to be driven in 2018 by these new unit orders coming in. And so what you will see is two things kick in 2018. You'll see the big orders that have come in from India. You'll see the actualization of the CBI Stone and Webster acquisition, which this year there is nothing in the financials because we're in the purchase accounting phase for the first year. And so you're going to see an ability for the nuclear businesses to I think, strengthen their balance sheet and be able to show the predictability as we finish these first sets of units. So the big thing in 18 is building off of the base that we've built with the services and fuels business, which has a very low discount rate, and we're believing that what we're going to be able to do is to get a composite discount rate that's actually less based on the amount of business that we have that's at a lower risk. And so as we take on the new unit orders that we take are built in at a rate that we're going to be able to not be impacted by any changes in that. And so, again, the plan was built very conservatively.
That was April, sorry. Mr. Muramachi gave a presentation to the press, and he said the current balance sheet, 430 billion in 2018, going into emerging market, and that's going to be off balance, and therefore, but there is going to be an increase in the service business. Therefore, at the end of the day, balance sheet will improve and more, and the details, the back bulk will come from fuel and the service. So the discount rate will come down, so that you'll be able to recover some of the impairment that you did. Is that correct?
Impairments were driven off of goodwill assessments, and unfortunately, there is nothing good that comes out of goodwill, because if your assets become too big, you have to write off goodwill, and if your assets are too low, you have to write off goodwill. But there's actually no upside to goodwill unless you make an acquisition that has more value than what you paid for it. And so reverse goodwill is very unusual. So I think, you know, the discount rate is applying more to what we apply to the goodwill calculations. And with the write-offs that are made and with the conservative plan we have, you know, we feel good about where we're going to be able to manage to not have another, concern from the goodwill on the nuclear side.
よろしいですか。ちょっと質問に答えてもらってないんですが、
I don't think you have answered my question. So you were saying the discount rate will come down from 11% or not, and the impairment test, the balance sheet went down. The 11%, for example, coming down to 9% or 10%, could that come back? That was my question. The reversal. That was my question.
Process we go through every year when we go through and look at it and talk to our auditors of what that discount rate is going to end up. But from our standpoint, with adding in the assets of the CBI Stone and Webster acquisition, with adding in the different projects that we have that are now have contracts for, we just don't see that there's the same risk that there was a few years ago with it. And I can get some other answers to you after, okay?
はい。では、一番前の。
So, the gentleman in the front.
ゴールドマンサックスの松橋です。
松橋 from Goldman Sachs. Please refer to page 11. This is the nuclear's earnings. So page 11. I have a question related to that, just to make a couple of confirmation related to this. So you will be reducing the remuneration and bonus.CBI Stone, the new consolidation impact, and also starting this year, the headquarters cost would be allocated by different segments. This is what I've heard starting this year. So, how would that impact the earnings of 2015 and also the plan for 2016? So, please explain the impact of these factors. And also, 2018,67 billion is the expectation. So we are expecting a spike from the previous year. So what are some of the factors to realize this number at this point? Would the bonus would be normalized at that point in 2018? So please answer these questions.
Well, you're certainly going to see the new units come in. That's what you're seeing the spike in 18 about.That is the realization of the India orders. This will be in the neighborhood of a $20 billion project, U.S. dollars. So when you look at that, what we're saying is we've been able to and will continue to grow steadily the service and fuel business for the rest of the period. We're going to add on to that the addition of the Stone and Webster CBI acquisition, which will be a profit generator for us.As well as the other new business opportunities. But the big change comes in 18 is as the India EPC contract, which will be signed next year, then one of the first elements of that is to kick off all the new contracts. That's why you're seeing it go up to 67. So all of those other things you mentioned about the reinstatement of the bonus, all those other things are already in the plan. We will continue to try to work on overheads. And we're not done with that yet. This plan made assumptions of what we would achieve. And so I'm not there yet that we can't do more. And so I'll be working very much to try to help drive those numbers of cost down even more. But we want to keep that top line there, so it should actually make us have a better number.
Perhaps you can tell us later. So 2015 to 2016, what are some of the special factors? So if you can give us more details, what are some of the special factors that would pose that spike from 2015 to 2016? Or what are some of the one-off issues? So are you relating to the headquarters cost allocation? No, not just that. So for instance, CVI Stone, according to the securities report, the sales and the earnings. So I think we have the number for the previous year, but there was no mentioning of the operating expenses and operating loss. So this year you would have a full contribution of CVI and Stone. So if you can give us what would be the content of that.
They're different understandings, so maybe I can help with this. We took all the cost of CBI Stone and Webster into our books this year. What we haven't taken is any profit from it. And so until we finish the purchase accounting, we still have the expense in this year, but we chose to take zero profit from it. And so as we leave the purchase accounting phase, our cost won't change, but we'll actually realize the profit after the purchase accounting phase ends next January. So there'll actually be a contribution that comes in after January, after the purchase accounting is made, if that's what the final numbers are. And so that's why it'll actually kick into FY16, which in 15 we had the cost, but we took none of the profit. So that's one difference in the two. The other items that you mentioned, obviously the write-downs were a big issue last year. But in a year-over-year look in nuclear overall, our costs are actually still going down, but our operating profits are going up because of the contracts that we've got.
Any other question? The one in the fourth row.
David Tong with Macquarie. I have 1.5 questions, I think. This is to do with the, I think, disappointing accelerations of nuclear plant closures in the United States. So I'm curious as to what your views on the fuel business in the United States will be from acceleration of those closures. And also, I would like to see whether you have a view onto TVL's entry into the U.S. fuel market for PWRs. With Quadrat, I think, basically with a target for 2020.
Two points. One is, you know, we're obviously interested and concerned about any plant that's announced it's going to close. At the Toshiba level, that power is going to have to be replaced by something, so we want to be that supplier. But at the nuclear level, what we're really looking at is the most of the plants that are closed tend to be in a very specific market segment. There has been a few that have closed off of technical problems, but most of them have to do with the market that they're in and problems where the market has been flooded in with subsidized renewables in a market that was supposed to be a non-regulated market. And so there's a lot of market reforms going on in the United States right now that I think will eventually solve this. The question is, how many plants do we lose between now and then? So right now there's about a total of 5 plants that we have. As far as our direct impact to them, only one of them was actually fueled and fully serviced by Westinghouse. The others were taken care of by someone else. So we haven't actually had a significant impact from that yet, but we obviously watch that very closely. As to the TVL announcement, I haven't seen any legs under it yet. They have a process they'll have to go through, just like we did when we started making VVER fuel. They'll have to get licensed in the U.S. They'll have to go through a very big process. And obviously, we're going to be watching and concerned about how much government money is put into subsidizing that assembly. And so Westinghouse will protect its interest about product dumping. And we clearly believe that it has Westinghouse has a technology advantage over the whatever they may come up with. And so, you know, again, it's a free market, and we welcome competition. We will make sure it's fair competition, and then we'll let the technology win at the end of the day.
Thank you.
よろしいでしょうか、あと。
Any other questions? If not, we would like to conclude the presentation by Energy System Solution. Thank you all.